This is Hitchhiking Off the Map.
Oh, and both of them said to me, well, I've never done any drugs. The worst drug I've ever done was alcohol. And I was like, well, you know, that is the worst drug you can do.
So we got to meet with Fidel in person. I was sitting like almost as close to him as I am to you.
But then, being inside of the Cuban government, I saw that it was just a cover-up for an actual communist takeover. Right?
And I had made up this scheme of, I was selling these Cuban freedom bonds.
And prior to that, I was just a kid growing up in Cuba, being just like any other regular kid.
So I gave one of the bonds to Fidel personally, and he says to me, well, you know, I'll bet you in 20 years this bond is going to be worth more than all the U.S. savings bonds put together.
Hello and welcome. This is Hitchhiking Off the Map. This is Conrad Bishop.
And Elizabeth Fuller, and this is a show about journeys. Those trips where you come back a little different, or a lot different, if that ever happened to you.
Well, actually, we're expected by the age of 5 to know what we want to be when we grow up. And, of course, the relatives chuckle about that then, but by high school, you had better decide which suit you want to fit into, yes?
I must not have been there when they took the class photos.
Actually, I was, and I looked extremely dorky.
Well, today's story is on kind of a drizzly day in Sebastopol, California. Three people who at some point in time were, in their communities, serious lawbreakers.
So we may get some emails. Why do we even give these people a forum? I mean, freedom of speech doesn't mean they have to speak out loud. They could whisper to the cat. And yet large numbers of people in their cultures would disagree profoundly with the laws they broke.
Or even the validity of the government that made the laws.
That's not normally what's meant by cultural diversity, but maybe that is the essence of cultural diversity.
First story, Sheldon.
Sheldon Norberg has written a book and performs a live solo show called Confessions of a Dope Dealer.
I was in the Kinko's making a poster for the show, and a girl comes up to me and looks at the picture and Confessions of a Dope Dealer, and she says to me, so are you saying drugs are good or bad? And I could tell she wanted me to say that drugs were bad. But I looked at her and said, well, what do you think it says? And she, you know, you could see the gears moving inside her head and the kind of steam coming out of the ear and the creaking sound inside her head. And she picked up her stuff off the counter and left.
So part of what we talked about were his credentials for his confessions.
I was raised in an atheistic environment, in a very rationalistic environment, so I didn't really have any approach to spirituality or looking at anything but the enforced cultural slavery aspect of religion. So I was very interested in, you know, where the mind goes and how you take it there. And when I was about 12, I came out to Berkeley to visit my brother, who was going to Cal, and smoked some weed. And I noticed a direct effect on my perceptual faculty from smoking weed, and it made me very interested in this different world, which I had, you know, out of hand rejected as evil, bad, detrimental to society and everything else, because I was well studied in the negative propaganda on drugs, and I was the junior narc officer of my elementary school. So it came as a real shock to me to find, A, that my brother was smoking dope and dropping acid and stuff like that, and that he was doing it in the context of hanging out with a bunch of young intellectuals who were the people that I really liked to hang out with. And by a certain point in high school, of where I was introduced to smoke a pot with all the dudes, I realized that I had this fantastic opportunity to sell weed when no one else had any, and I could go to Berkeley and score weed of the highest quality and bring it back to my small town and blow everybody away. And pretty quickly I was dealing acid and mushrooms and hash and everything to everyone in my high school and dropping acid every week and on Friday and partying wildly and made it through high school very well to captain the debate team, you know, in the top 10% of my class and ready to go to UCLA and totally ready to give up drugs and move on to an academic pursuit of filmmaking and acting and so forth, and got busted by my parents toward the end of that summer, and it was some emotional wreckage that I had a little difficulty recovering from. So when I went to UCLA, I continued my partying and realized that it was another hotbed of activity, and I started going back and forth to Berkeley every week or 2 weeks and buying load after load after load and becoming a huge dealer and getting involved in the Grateful Dead, start seeing the Dead and dropping lots of acid and getting somewhat disturbedly paranoid and somewhat delusional and grandiose. And after my scene at UCLA crashed, I wound up up in Humboldt County trimming weed because I was pretty vegged out and just hanging out in the woods was about all I could handle. But I still had a brain on enough to get to work for my friends and become a massive dope grower and come back to Berkeley and become a pretty stable force in the currency of weed in Berkeley. And it was like, here's the advice from your astrologer. Let go of everything you think you need to have. And pretty soon I lost everything, lost all my money, lost my, you know, business, girlfriend fell in love with my best friend. You know, what I talk about in general when I'm, you know, lecturing or talking in public, you know, is the way we as a culture tend to abuse any kind of drug. The model for use of any kind of drug in this culture is abuse. We don't have an understanding of how to moderately use drugs or how historically drugs, particularly psychedelics, are taken in a context of healing, reasoning, searching for information. So we put aside a lot of the revelations that are given to us. And for me, as a very, very bright and precocious kid, I was ready to have the universe broken open and, you know, show me the inner workings. But to be exposed to the dark side of my psyche, to really start to come up against my own fears of who I am, all was continually playing out in my face, and I was ready for none of that because I hadn't really, it's not something you ever consider. It's not something you ever think about mapping out at that age. And it's stuff that is way up for you and meant to be dealt with in a kind of more slower standard progression. And I was getting it splattered all over me and hiding, because at the same time this stuff's being shown to me, I'm also trying to control my little empire of drug dealing. I'm doing everything to make sure that everyone else is totally high, having the adventurous time of their life, and I'm trying to take twice as much so that I can break through any sort of personal barrier and still be in control of this whole scene. And, you know, the words acid and control have these real split ends of the spectrum. And when, yeah, and anybody who has spent enough time around acid can tell you that, you know, you really have to learn to give up control or you will be rubbed out. And the harder you try to hold on to control, the harder the universe will rub you out. And I started to build up these paranoid fantasies about the Dead and this whole secret society and who was in charge of the whole Dead world and, you know, every bit of minutia about what you're doing and what this appearance represents in this context, but in front of these people, is always, always, always running through my mind and making me, you know, the mask, the, you know, facade thicker and thicker. Because at the same time that you're doing all of this, you know, in this culture at least, you cannot be completely free of fear because you're a massive drug dealer. And at any time, the door could be kicked in. The feds are on tour. You're following the Grateful Dead around. There's 100 DEA agents at every concert. You're receiving drugs in the mail or something. And you think the postman's going to be a narc. It's everyone everywhere. So it would have been a lot easier on me if I had taken some of the shortcuts, if I had taken the information that was being presented to me and actually ingested it and sat with it and integrated some of the things I was being shown in my early experiences. I think I would have moved along things much faster. And then, the responsibility that goes with taking drugs is not light. It's one that is very... you really have to be committed to yourself and to your community and realize what the impairments to yourself that are possible are, as well as, how not to be risking the community at large or other people by stupid behavior.
I asked, have you ever known someone to be truly messed up by stuff you gave them?
Of course. One of my best friends ate some mushrooms at a dead show and thought he was Jesus and, still thought he was Jesus 3 or 4 days later. And I guess kind of still thought he was Jesus when his parents came to pick up his stuff and take him home. And that was tragic. I've seen him once since then, and no one else has seen him. It really, really killed me. I think everyone has the border of mental disturbance within them and how they're able to confront their being and deal with their issues makes or breaks them. I was just thinking of what one of my friends said was that it's helpful to have your ego in place before you try to shatter it. And drugs magnify the issues of the people who use them. And because drugs have, certain neurochemical actions that make them appealing to different people who those particular neurochemical actions are appealing to, their internal landscape is magnified in ways that are sometimes unpleasant. Drugs also magnify some of the brighter parts of the landscape and can show you amazing and valuable things, and drugs are good. Drugs have fabulous healing potentials and can be good. When you read LSD psychotherapy, they were administering large doses of LSD to people and putting them on a cot with eye shades in a comfortable place, putting on some music and maybe taking some notes on what they had to say, maybe occasionally talking to them, but basically letting them have the entire experience. So it really is, from that perspective, sort of cheap and greasy to eat a bunch of acid and go see some band and to just be out tripping rather than trying to internalize and journey allows you to... project all of your stuff onto what's going by. So the Grateful Dead, I can tell why Jerry had to become a junkie and die, because, 10,000 people a night are projecting all of their Jesus trips, all of their Satan trips, all of their guru trips, all of their mom and dad and, all their stuff on him every night. And God, who wants to deal with that? It'll make you sick. And that's a great disservice to all of us. It's a criminal loss, that a few good trips that are internalized and well integrated could make you a lot clearer about what you're doing being a human than hopping on a train and running around tripping your brains out again and again and again, getting none of the important information that's available to you.
So how do you make a living when your work experience is not what would look so good on a resume? Well, besides his book and his show, Sheldon trained as a psychic. He now specializes in clearing people's houses of what he describes as residual energy from past occurrences.
I was taking a walk with my parents. They come to visit me, and they're like, "So what are you doing now, son? You know, what are you going to do?" And I was like, "Well, you know that the psychic gig is working pretty well. I charge a fair amount to do what I do, work on people's houses, and I'm getting clients referred, and you know, I'm staying pretty stable doing my psychic work." And the conversation ended. There was this silence for like another block, and I realized, you know, you could hear the Muni like three blocks away or something, because it just seemed like the world went silent. And I realized that even though it destroyed my parents to find out I was a drug dealer and we didn't talk for years and it was really difficult for them, in retrospect, it was easier for them to deal with me being a drug dealer than a psychic, because they could recognize market forces and the buy, sell, trade aspect of life and the communication of spiritual information and energy transfer was so beyond them that they were now, you know, once again, very edgy about being with me or about me being their son. But eventually I went and worked on their house, and they noticed some changes, and they, you know, started to respect what I do a little more. You know, I think, you know, it's very clear to me that some of the places I had been on psychedelics definitely gave me levels of consciousness to aim for in my meditation practice, and understandings of some of the deep consciousness ideas, and working in spaces where there was energy and residue from people who had died or been murdered, or I'd have to sit and psychically watch these events go on and kind of converse or energetically mediate things with these spirits, was not as frightening or painful for me as it was some other people who were, you know, less guarded or had had less terrifying, paranoid, edge of the universe psychedelic experiences.
And when he faced the ultimate freak out?
it really freaked me out. You know, when I found out I was going to have a kid, I was like, wow, you know, this is something I've been avoiding for my entire adult life. And I'm 41. And I'm just now finally at a point where I have a career I can really sink my teeth into and respect what I'm doing and feel like I need to be very active and travel a bunch to do it. And it was really a lot for me to deal with, and, you know, to deal with what I've been going through to transfer out of my old ways of being. And I went to Peru for a few days earlier this year and spent some time in the jungle with a shaman doing some medicine work. And I had really profound experiences of being aware of what it is to be an infant and what it means to be in relationship to another being that needs you, and of seeing my own infancy and really an incredible rebirth experience that I think really grounded me and put me in a place where I felt like I've dealt with every kind of weird, bizarre thing you can imagine in the world. And the thing that had stricken me with the most fear in the world always was that I could potentially be thought of as being normal. And now I have to confront like the ultimate normalcy, which is having a kid, and do it with aplomb and finesse and caring and concern and the finesse of the diaper change. And, you know, he's a big kid now. He's like 15 pounds at 2 months. And I was just realizing today that the diaper doesn't just slip under him as easily as it did. And it takes a little finagling to get it in there right and, you know, keep him from squealing and stuff. So it's taken a little change of my being to be ready for this. And I think that the medicine work definitely helped prepare me to say, okay, this is going to be okay. And whatever comes down, I'll be okay, and I'll keep an even keel.
In Oakland, California, we were talking with Sheldon Norberg.
Sheldon has a book and also a live performance. Both are entitled Confessions of a Dope Dealer, and you can visit his website for information on that and links to news of drug policy and research. That's at www.adopedealer.com. To get the dope, however, you will have to go elsewhere.
This is Hitchhiking Off the Map.